have my iPad out, ready for some questions
Gotcha.
for you and stuff.
Cool.
So, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. Welcome back to Alive if you're watching this currently on YouTube. I am accompanied by Dr. Tyler Panzner. Dr. Tyler, what's going on?
What's going on, man? Super excited to be chatting. Grateful to have the opportunity to spread my knowledge and insights on what I think is a very overlooked angle that can be used to enhance your health, not just with POTS, which we'll touch on, but other aspects as well, which I boiled down to using genetics to figure out what nutrients your cells need and, more importantly, don't need. A lot of people are given the wrong supplements, which can make their health issues worse.
Heck yeah, man. So that's something that I'm super excited to talk about too. I've talked to quite a bit of people about that, is that depending on how you react independently to a certain supplement, it can actually be detrimental to your health. And so I think that there's so much misunderstanding out there, rightfully so. Like, there's so many arbiters of information out there when it comes to health, nutrition, science, things of that nature. And so it's kind of up to, I guess, the people who have a little bit of an audience to help sift through the bullshit, right? And help people on their journey. So, real
I don't even know
quick.
if I really call it bullshit too, because what helps one person could be bullshit for another, right? And
Yeah.
it's you have, I feel like my mission is to help people on an individual basis figure out which health information should they listen to or not listen to. You have some people saying eat carnivore, some people say don't eat carnivore, eat this, don't eat that, take this, don't take that. It's information overwhelm in today's age. TikTok, Instagram, everywhere, it's just all this information overwhelm. And there's no real way to know what actually matters or not for you.
Sure. Yeah. So we'll get into that definitely. So I want to real quick give you an introduction so that people kind of know who you are and what you're about. We are accompanied by Dr. Tyler Panzner. He is a PhD scientist trained in pharmacology, cancer, neuroscience, and inflammation research, who has had a lifelong passion for understanding how substances affect the body. While his scientific training spans well over a decade, his passion for genetics and personalized medicine started 7 years ago, and he's pursued his goal of personalizing vitamin, supplement, and lifestyle protocols for each individual. He not only figures out exactly what your unique cells need, but also educates about which vitamins, supplements, and foods will clash with your unique biology. Using his approach, he believes that not only daily quality of life improves, but the risk of chronic illness or chronic diseases, rather, are greatly reduced. Dr. Tyler Panzner firmly believes that one's underlying genetic code dictates what the body needs to thrive. He's driven to genetically optimize the human experience, of life through his holistic genetic health optimization practice. So, Tyler, Dr. Tyler, let's talk about like your origin story first. Why did you get interested in this? Are you somebody who's been deeply engulfed in health and wellness for a long time, or did you deal with any sort of chronic illness yourself? What was it for you that got you into it?
Yeah, so I've always been big into science. I remember, Crocodile Hunter, Steve Irwin, Jeff Corwin, I was really big into the animals. I wanted to be like a herpetologist studying reptiles or wildlife biologist. But once we started learning about cells, and I think it was high school biology, I was just fascinated that these cells are like mini cities. We're made up of trillions of them, and these cells make up our body, and there's a city inside of each one of these cells and all these little things moving around and stuff. So that's what really got me interested in asking why. I remember asking my teacher questions, and who would always come down to Tyler, don't worry about it. You don't need to know that. I always want to know why, how things are actually working on the molecular level. So I did my bachelor's at University of South Florida down in Tampa. I opted to do a major in cell and molecular biology, not pre-med. Ironically, I didn't want to really work with people. I didn't want people to be yelling at me to give them their medications, this or that. So I was focusing on how cells function during healthy and disease states. I remember organic chemistry, that lecture, the professor drew a structure on the board and said, "This is caffeine. This binds receptors and wakes you up." I looked down at my coffee and I was like, "Oh my God, it's not just magic. It's not unicorn magic while this pre-workout wakes you up. It's not magic. There's literally exact molecular steps how it interacts with your body that makes you feel certain ways."
Sure.
So that was a big aha moment for me. And I remember being at office hours with my organic, no, I think it was my cell metabolism professor, figuring out what I wanted to do with my life afterwards. And he said, "You should check out pharmacology." I was thinking about pharmacy, but again, I didn't want to be at a CVS getting yelled at to fill out people's prescriptions and stuff. Looked into pharmacology. And for you guys listening, pharmacy is more so taking existing knowledge about drugs and applying it to people. So what dosage, what medications? Pharmacology is doing the research in the lab coat, working with the mice, working with the cells, and discovering new things, doing what's never been done before. I've always been very, very creative, and that really, really interested me a lot. So I pursued a PhD in pharmacology at Stony Brook University up on Long Island, New York, where I'm at now, and was just fascinated with learning how the body works. All the pre-workouts I was making from home, you know, selling to my friends on the side, this or that, you know, that used to get you going. And just learning how you can tweak your own perception through things that affect your brain chemistry, make yourself more jacked up, make yourself more calmed down. And I got into genetics when I did a 23andMe test. I wouldn't say I had very severe chronic health issues, but I've always struggled with anxiety, headaches, brain fog, some sleep issues, not like full-blown generalized anxiety disorder, but very prone to stress. And I would feel overwhelmed very easily. Looked at my 23andMe and it said bunch of stuff like more likely to think cilantro tastes like soap, not this game changing information. So I looked at the raw data and I figured out, oh, I break down adrenaline much slower than normal people. That's why I'm so stressed. What does that gene that doesn't work as well need to function? It needs magnesium. It needs something called SAMe. I tried both of those. They changed my life overnight. I was so much more calm, cool, collected. I was like, oh my God, does this work for other people? So I started to do it with friends and family, you know, not as a business, on the side. And that was probably around 6-7 years ago. And 2 years ago, roughly to the day, I started my genetic health practice where I'm looking at your DNA, not what drugs you need, but I help people get off of medications. I believe that at least when it comes to mood, anxiety, depression, sleep medications, I think most people don't need those. There's underlying molecular issues, cellular issues going on that we can use genetics to pinpoint what some of these issues are. I'll never claim genetics are like the only way to fix things, right? It's just another tool that I really don't see people utilizing this way. So I went all in on my idea, and you know, it's been surreal how many people I've been able to help and just getting started from here. And yeah, here we are now, worked with hundreds of people thus far, change their lives, help guide them what foods and supplements they should take and they should avoid to help optimize their experience of life.
So for optimizing people's life, let's talk about that for a second, right? Are you the type of person that kind of jumps to supplementation and, you know, drug intervention, or is it more so lifestyle intervention first? I tend to see a lot of people think that there's going to be a miracle supplement or drug, especially with the population that I work with. And more times than not, I tell them to hold off on the supplement and make these changes first. Because as we know, the majority of people have like radical lifestyles that can be changed, you know, that will probably do at least, I would say like 60% of the job. So many people are sedentary. They're eating like hyper processed foods. They're not doing anything to decompress or de-stress throughout their life. And they're actually adding more stress via alcohol or cigarettes and all these different factors that are lifestyle. So are you a person that tends to suggest lifestyle things before bringing the pharmacological part into it? Or is it the other way around? Or a third one, I guess, could be if somebody's like desperate, if there's a need, like an instant need.
So I'm a firm believer in all the foundational lifestyle habits. I will never claim that supplements can outwork a poor lifestyle. You know, my background is in pharmacology, and most people I work with, they're doing everything right. They move their bodies, they eat all organic, they've seen all these functional medicine doctors, and they still feel like crap. Most people are already doing the right things. So I tend to be more so on the supplement. I'm a very supplement forward practice, but when I work with some people I work with, they're like, yeah, my diet's crap. And, you know, I tell them, just so you know, you're never going to be 100% not eating well. There's just only so much I can do as one person practitioner, right? I'm not a nutritionist, but I can let you know which healthy foods might actually be making you feel worse, because it's not just healthier processed garbage. Now, of course, getting rid of the processed foods, getting your sleep, looking at the sun in the morning, not directly, of course, but getting that sunlight exposure in the morning. These are all foundational things, but the vast majority of my clients, they're already doing these things and they're not feeling good. Why are they not? Then we look at the genetics. That one supplement they're taking is actually making their adrenaline issues, their anxiety issues worse. their naturopath has no idea that that supplement raises adrenaline. So to answer your question, I'm a firm believer in those things being foundational things first. I just, within my practice, don't have the bandwidth to work with people trying to optimize all those other things. I view what I do as like an adjunct. I collaborate with a lot of other practitioners that are doing the basics. You know, I've communicated with their nutritionists or their prescribing physicians to give further guidance there. Because if you're a nutritionist, you know what's healthy or not. But if that person has a genetic sulfur sensitivity, the onions, garlic, eggs they're having could be messing them up. I work with so many people that I tell them, stop having your eggs in the morning. And they love eggs. And they're like, wow, I think so much clearer now because they had too much sulfur in their bodies. There are supplements we could use to help break down the sulfur. And I'm not saying eggs are bad for everybody, right? The eggs themselves aren't bad, but a certain component in the eggs, your cells are sensitive to.
Sure. Okay. So there's a lot there for sure. So I have this talk a lot when I go live with people. They say, or even if I'm like onboarding a new client and we're talking over diet, right? And they'll go, well, I eat very healthy. I'm like, that's a very like kind of hard word to break down, because healthy is different per individual. And that's actually something that after reading Dr. Ben Lynch's book, Dirty Genes, I kind of like was more privy to, is that, you know, somebody could eat, like you said, eggs. It's a super healthy food. There's a bunch of nutrients in it, choline, all the things that are good for your brain, the fats and whatever. But then for one person, it may not actually be healthy for them, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for example, if someone does have a sensitivity to sulfur, and eggs may cause a little bit of headache or brain fog or anxiety. And we'll go into this in a bit when we talk about POTS, because that sulfur makes your cells, your mast cells, release histamine. That's what can cause these different types of symptoms. So, and I'm not saying this is everyone, but I've worked with people with POTS that the sulfur foods make the POTS symptoms worse, because I'm thinking in terms of pathways, what's going to lower that histamine in the body, which can be linked to that. But for example, molybdenum or molybdenum, that's a micronutrient that is in the soil that our gene, the SUOX gene, S-U-O-X, this gene uses molybdenum to break down sulfur in the body. So I've worked with people that they remove the eggs, they feel better, but they love eggs. They love the way they taste. They just don't love how it makes them feel. They take a little more molybdenum. That was you?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. So take a little more molybdenum with your eggs and you feel great afterwards. Because again, the eggs aren't the issue. There just might be higher sulfur or higher histamine in the body.
Sure.
So I also give people options. Hey, if you want to eat this food, it is healthy for you. Take this supplement to help you with that sulfur. So I like to meet people with where they're at as well and kind of find workarounds. You can have supplements to offset effects of other supplements if you want a desired effect from another supplement. I know that can sound kind of complex, but every supplement does many things in the human body. Sure. Most practitioners look at what's on the bottle. It helps with inflammation. Great. Well, what if that also chelates iron or copper out of the body? If you have low iron, low copper, or borderline low, that supplement can make you very, very sick. It's helping your inflammation, but it's pulling these metals and minerals out of your body. Yeah. So you're in a deficiency state. So there's no right or wrong. If you have genetically, if you have very high iron, then that supplement could be perfect for you. But if you have low to normal iron, I'll be very mindful of that. And I see it all the time. It still blows my mind sometimes how many people, they can feel so much better, the best they felt in years, by just getting off of the wrong supplements. Your practitioner may know gut health. They may know heavy metals. They may know POTS. They may know mold. They do not know pharmacology, which is how supplements and drugs work. So don't you think it's kind of weird that, like, you know, everyone's giving pharmacology advice based on supplements when no one's actually trained on the pharmacology? It's like a doctor prescribing medications without being trained on the medication. That always kind of seemed a little odd to me.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I actually just ran an experiment on myself, kind of, where I was taking glutathione. And, you know, everybody's like, glutathione is the magic supplement. You know, it's the master antioxidant. That all may be true. However, I started noticing that I was getting like shaky and almost feeling depleted by taking too much glutathione. I don't know if maybe you've heard this before. And so what I did was, I thought that maybe it was kind of decreasing the amount of iron, heavy metal, like certain metals that you need, or the minerals, whatever. And I started taking colostrum because of it. And it was like a miracle supplement. I don't know if those two would like go together, but it kind of made me connect a couple of things for myself.
Well, let me tell you also, glutathione is very high in sulfur.
Mm.
So you see the dots we're connecting here. I'm all about pattern recognition here.
Sure.
You're sensitive to eggs, which are high in sulfur. So no wonder you'll be sensitive to glutathione, which is high in sulfur. Mm. NAC, alpha lipoic acid, MSM, these are all supplements that are higher in sulfur. Mm. So you see already, like, it could be the sulfur thing. It may be something else, right? But from my experience, I don't really use glutathione in my practice. I want to give you the building blocks and help you make more of it yourself. I've had clients that break out in full body hives, like their skin's peeling because there's a massive histamine response because they're doing this high dose IV glutathione. Mm. And in the holistic space, practitioners recommend that like candy, that and N-acetylcysteine. They put people on both, which to me makes no sense. Why would you take the building block, the glutathione, and take glutathione itself? It's just more sulfur.
Yeah.
And then they have them, you know, they have them having like a garlic pill. High dose garlic for detox. That's also high in sulfur. Mm. So people have these migraines. They're taking NAC, glutathione, garlic. And I'm like, good God, remove those. 2 days after, they're like, oh my God, you literally cured my migraines.
Sure.
And I'm like, it's crazy. And again, guys, I'm not saying this is everyone with migraines, right? There are different flavors of every ailment. Mm-hmm. Some people could be high blood pressure for migraines. Some could be low. Some could be sulfur. Some could be histamine. Some could be nitric oxide. A lot of different root drivers here. But again, you mentioned the glutathione. It makes sense with the eggs as well there. So imagine if you're someone starting your morning off with, you know, eggs, maybe some garlic powder, like on the eggs. You have your liposomal glutathione. Maybe you have a cup of coffee. The roasting process for coffee releases histamine.
Oh, don't say that.
So yeah. The cold brew is definitely better, but I never felt great on coffee. Have you ever seen the meme where it's like it's like a skeleton sitting in a chair, and it's like when you caffeinate and it doesn't wake you up, it just raises your heart rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of people feel like that.
And that's me.
I'm the same way. I never felt sharp from coffee.
Sure.
And I believe it's because the caffeine is working in your body. It's raising your heart rate. But the histamine is going to your brain and making you have the brain fog. Mm. So it's masking the cognitive effects. So imagine, again, the coffee in the morning, your liposomal glutathione, 3-4 whole eggs with some garlic powder on it. No wonder why you have this brain fog headache in the morning and you're off the entire day. We remove some of those things. I'll maybe utilize a low dose caffeine pill because caffeine doesn't have histamine. Mm. So you see the coffee itself might be the issue. And people are like, oh my God, like I can't believe you made me not have coffee for 3 weeks, but now I went back and had it and it actually does mess me up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's rough. That's rough, especially for me, because coffee is like my new beer, right? Yeah. Like I gave up drinking a couple of years ago, and coffee is like, you know, I'll go and I'll have the taste testing. I'll try different nitros or whatever. Yeah. So hey,
like I said, the cold brew is better for sure. A lot lower histamine overall. That could be something worth trying as well.
Yeah, we have some of that in the fridge. Thank God, Paper Street Coffee. So hey, I wanted to kind of touch this because the mainstream narrative is kind of such that, like, if you listen to Dr. Mike Isretals or BioLanes, like Lane Norton, guys like that, they say a lot of times that most of your issues can be figured out just by, like, having, you know, controlling calories, being in a slight deficit, you know, lifting weights, all these different things. I tend to think that health is a lot more complicated than a lot of these guys make it seem, because it's interesting because sometimes they'll take these they'll go through hoops and ladders and talk about ancestrally we needed to lift weights and we require a certain amount of movement or whatever, but then they don't really talk about the nutrient part of it, right? Where like ancestrally we had way better food, there was more vitamins and minerals in the soil and things, and so, but they just basically talk about controlling calories and how that's going to change your life. How important do you think, I guess, How much data is there in the genetics realm to kind of back up the things that you're talking about, the things that we kind of believe in terms of histamine, genetics, and how diet can actually play a role? And it's not just exercise and limiting. Well, they don't even say limit sugar as long as it fits in your macros, right? If it fits your macros crowd. How much data is there to kind of support that instead of the mainstream narrative?
Yeah. So first off, I want to make an important distinction that the goals of people like Elaine Norton, they're concerned with getting people from, you know, obese or overweight to a healthy body weight, right? I'm concerned with absolute health optimization. So the goals here are different, right? Like, if you have a little bit of brain fog a couple times a week, I'm going to help you figure out why. But obviously losing weight, you know, adipose tissue, these cells release pro-inflammatory cytokines. So of course that is a great way to feel better. But again, the goalpost is shifted. It's not just one thing to not feel as crappy. I want you to feel the best you could feel. So I am going to dig a lot deeper, and things that people may brush aside is, oh, I just had an off day. That to me is an issue we want to try and address. Now, there is so much evidence on genetics, but the way I look at these things, the way I approach things, it's ahead of where science is at currently. And I have lots of indirect pieces of evidence. Lane is a very big, rigid, evidence-based guy. But one point I like to bring up is, let's just say they're seeing if a supplement works for a certain ailment. They have 100 people, they give them the supplement. And you look at all of them. Some of them respond well, some of them don't respond at all. When you run the statistics on all 100, it's not significant. There's no change. But why do some people, some pockets of people respond very well to it? Others don't respond at all. Others may get worse. What is the explanation for that? I believe that it's because the way the supplement works is addressing the flavor of dysfunction for that person. So for example, let's just say people are depressed. You give them a supplement that raises serotonin. The people that respond well to that, I don't think it's that big of a jump to say they likely have issues with their serotonin system. That's why they responded better to it. If you don't have serotonin issues, why would taking a supplement that raised serotonin help you that much? It's not the right tool for that individual. So if you think about it, we don't stratify any studies for drugs, supplements, any of this by genetics at all. Every dot on the data, on the chart, is supposed to be a biological replicate. When we do mouse studies, at least it's mice from the same litter. So they're very genetically similar. We have all, sure, you may have people that are all, like a lot of genetic studies say in Caucasians or in Eastern Han Chinese population. So they do try to get certain things like that, but we are all genetically diverse. So you see what I'm saying? You know, if you see a supplement, all 100 people, you run the statistics, it doesn't help. Lane or evidence-based people will say, nope, it doesn't work. Don't waste your money. It's I don't know, it's snake oil, whatever. You know, they would say that. I'm wondering, why did 20 out of the 100 people respond so well to it? So you see how it's a different, this is why I take all data with a grain of salt. I'll be honest, I'm not a very big math or statistics guy. I'm very big on concepts because the way we study these things is inherently flawed because it's like getting like a snake, a monkey, a tiger, and a bird and telling them all to go climb a tree. They're all going to do it differently because they're, I mean, we're not different species, but you see what I'm saying there. So that's a really important distinction. When you really think about that for a second and mull it over in your mind, if we were to separate people by that had more of these issues, we could really figure out why they're responding so well. So like, for example, they've done studies that in children with mutations in how they break down histamine, they don't break down histamine as well. They're more prone to ADHD from food dyes. Evidence people may say that's just one study, not a huge sample size. But to me, that's data for how my brain looks at these patterns and stuff. If you have that, that same mutation, it's linked to asthma. It's linked to allergies. It's linked to headaches. So it's linked to all these other things that are linked to high histamine. So just because that gene wasn't studied for, I don't know, let's say POTS. We know POTS can be linked to high histamine. So my brain looks on the pathway sides of things. So if you have that mutation, it could be contributing to your high histamine, which could be contributing to your POTS. So does that kind of answer your question? I have many pieces of indirect data that I can explain are all pointing towards the same thing. It's like saying, we've known for a while that processed foods cause inflammation. We've also known for a while that inflammation causes depression and anxiety. The study just came out a couple of months ago proving ultra-processed foods cause anxiety and depression. But for many, many years now, anyone with half a brain can figure out A causes B B causes C. Yeah. Therefore, A can cause C. I don't want to wait around for that data to come out. I'm changing people's lives on the individual level. Also, people like Lane, they're looking at big data and giving more sweeping recommendations for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's wrong. My approach is just different, working from the individual upwards.
Yeah. So one thing that a friend of mine who became an orthopedic surgeon, a spinal orthopedic surgeon in hospital, he actually told me, he was like, sometimes the only thing that you have to save someone's life is working off of anecdote. And I think that anecdote is so, so demonized, especially in the health world, because it's like, if you've seen certain things. So for POTS, for example, what I've noticed a lot with working, you know, with my clientele, is that they all tend to be super prone to anxiety or almost like obsessive thoughts, right? Like intrusive thoughts, kind of health anxieties. And so like, to me, that screams a couple different things, but it seems to me that if we dive a little bit into POTS, I really want to touch on histamine in a second here, but if we dive a little bit into POTS, what I've kind of seen is that there's this health anxiety portion of things that, you know, in the POTS community, people get so upset that doctors are like, hey, what you're experiencing is anxiety. It's not like anything real or whatever. And they're like, the doctors are gaslighting me, right? And then, but really the two can kind of be don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? So like you can have real symptoms and then it causes anxiety, or anxiety can cause more symptoms psychosomatically or whatever, right? So what I've seen is like, we have to address some of the stuff, because anecdotally, I've seen this 1,000 times. So you have to address the anxiety portion of it as well. Do you get what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. And you know, like you mentioned there about anecdotes, evidence, people will say anecdotes don't matter. But when what you're doing is ahead of where current literature is at, exactly proving every exact thing, anecdotes and what I call hyper-educated guesses. So using a lot of indirect pieces of data. I read a lot of studies, but it's indirect, all point, like 50 studies, 20 studies, all pointing towards the same ideation that explains why all these things are true. Those hyper-educated guesses are what my practice is based off of. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love utilizing all over-the-counter supplements. Because what if I'm wrong? Whoop-de-doo, you're anxious for a day or two, you're nauseous for a day or two, and then you stop the supplement, you wasted $30, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I love being all natural over the counter. I'm pointing you towards things you could already get on your own accord. I'm not recommending invasive surgery or addictive medications. Mm-hmm. So you're allowed to be more exploratory with that. You know, evidence-based people may say anecdotes don't count. To me, it's what I need to go off of. And as I've worked with hundreds of people, I don't have a big team. It's me working with each individual. You get literally me hand-making your report, working with you, and picking up on these patterns.
Well, and you're building your own database, essentially.
Exactly. And, you know, the pattern recognition skills are really what allow me to do what I do. People will say certain things. I'm looking at the genes. I'm like, you know what? Let's try this thing here. I never used this one in this scenario, but it's hard to describe subconsciously out of things I've read and stuff. That's why I'm really excited to, you know, build more of that actual database and really, you know, put this out there. So others can begin to do this. But a lot of what I do still is, you know, I'm still learning a lot as I go as well. There's always more genes to focus on. I've worked with a lot of, you know, autistic children, and I'm starting to see certain patterns where, okay, a lot of them have these certain clusters of issues or this cluster of issues over here. I don't have an autism protocol. I don't have a POTS protocol. I don't have an anxiety protocol. I work to build a insert client name protocol, right? Sure, for each individual. That was the other part of the question.
I don't necessarily remember that, but I do have a question for you on that stuff. So you're saying that you have per individual, right? How many of the things that you see chronic illness wise, are kind of, I have a hard time like with the label of POTS or whatever, because I'm like, POTS, and maybe this works with autism too. I don't know. You could educate me on that. POTS seems to be, and a lot of chronic illnesses seem to be like these umbrella terms for all these symptoms, right? Yep. So how much do you focus on the thing, on the illness itself, rather than just the symptomology that the person is dealing with?
Yeah, great question. So first off, the S in POTS stands for syndrome. Mm-hmm. which is basically, that's literally just an umbrella clusterfuck, right? Yeah. Like, it's like IBS. It's right. Like there's, so things with the syndrome, that's literally what it is, because they don't exactly know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you hit the nail on the head. People think in terms of labels, diagnoses. Of course, if you tell me you have no mood or stress issues, I'm not going to waste time talking to you about your neurotransmitter mutations. Right. But when you think in terms of pathways, what can be linked to anxiety, POTS, depression, Alzheimer's, autism, high histamine, mm-hmm. low vitamin D,
yep.
methylation issues. So you see how I look in terms of the pathways. Of course, I take that with a grain of salt, right? I'm not going to waste time if you have no gut issues looking into gut mutations. Right. But I do focus on the underlying cellular pathways. Mm-hmm. Looking black and white with the genetics, what pathways, what steps of the pathways don't work well or work too well? Which cogs in the machine don't work as well? Let's support those and watch what happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
MTHFR is linked to virtually every disease you could think of, yet everyone acts like you take methylfolate, it fixes everything.
Right.
It can help a lot of people, but it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. Methylfolate can make some people feel worse with MTHFR. You got to look at the other genes. And that's a big issue I see in the genetic space. They want to ship out these kits for $200, $300, give you a big laundry list and say, figure it out. There's a reason why most of my clients, they have like 6 genetic tests done already, because they're not getting the proper support. They're not going deep enough. They're not being properly educated about their unique body, not just what the genes mean, but the patterns to look out for. Like I mentioned, you know, the eggs, the glutathione, the sulfur, apple cider vinegar is also very high in histamine. So you see the patterns are really, really important as well. But sure. Yeah, I'm looking at the back end pathways. What genetically is the most disrupted? Let's give the cells more of what they needed more throughout your entire life and limit what they're sensitive to, mm-hmm. and see what happens downstream from there.
So yeah, something that you said that was really interesting to me is that you said, so if you're telling me that you don't have mood disorders or whatever, let's just take the MTHFR gene, for example, right? Let's say that you do have a gene mutation in MTHFR, but you're saying that you don't have mood disorders, you don't have like, but you have other things that kind of accompany an MTHFR mutation. I guess, how would you go about treating that mutation, or do you at all? Because I think oftentimes what does happen is a practitioner will be like, oh, you have this gene mutation or whatever, so we just have to treat the gene mutation. When in reading Dr. Ben Lynch's book, right, he talks about, just because you have a gene mutation, it doesn't mean that you're damned to the circumstances of that gene mutation. Is that something that you agree with? And if so, why? If not, why not?
Yeah, I agree and disagree.
Okay.
Now, Ben Lynch focuses a lot on methylation histamine. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously, what I do is very niche, but I'm more of a generalist with genetics. I'm looking at other pathways as well. Methylation is very, very complex. You can have mutations that make you have higher homocysteine and also lower homocysteine. So maybe you have MTHFR, but your homocysteine is in a good range, mm-hmm. or maybe due to other gene mutations, like a CBS gene mutation or an AHCY mutation, these can lower your homocysteine. Mm-hmm. So I've worked with people that have MTHFR mutations, their homocysteine is medium to low, and their practitioner wants to put them on a bunch of methyl B12, methylfolate, that they're going to be overmethylating. You can be overmethylating versus undermethylating. So you need to go more than just one gene. I'll see what people are eating as well. I'll talk about them, see how they're doing. And I think so many supplements are so overdosed. Mm-hmm. 15 milligrams of methylfolate. I usually start people on like 0.8 milligrams of that, maybe 1 milligram of that. I start slow with that because there's other ways to lower homocysteine other than just taking methylfolate. One thing not a lot of people are aware of is methyl nutrients. They do help us methylate things, turn genes on and off, make neurotransmitters. They also help us convert dopamine into adrenaline. Noradrenaline into adrenaline. Mm. So someone like me, I believe you as well, we had some slower breakdown of adrenaline genetically. So I try methyl vitamins. If I take, I can only handle a little bit of them. I get very overstimulated and anxious because I'm very sensitive to that adrenaline. Mm. So all these factors come into play. Like certain mutations, if you're hardwired, to never convert vitamin D to the form your body needs, you need to take the pre-activated form. But things like let me put it this way. Ben Lynch is right regarding things that are cycles or networks of different things. Mm-hmm. But when there's more linear pathways, A to B to C to D, and that's pretty much the pathway. Mm-hmm. If you can't convert B into C, that's a genetic hardwiring. You need to take more of C, right? Yeah. So it does depend on the pathway, but Ben Lynch focuses primarily on histamine methylation, and they're both connected as well. Methylation is involved with breaking down histamine as well.
Let's talk about methylation real quick. Can you give us like the preschool introduction to what methylation is? And then after that, we'll talk about histamine as well. I would also, if you could talk about why that would be important for people with POTS, and then this might be a little bit difficult, but you're a smart guy. and for athletes too, because I know that a lot of like even high level CrossFitters will be watching this when I put it to my other channel, because I personally think that histamine and methylation are something that athletes specifically should be paying a lot of attention to.
Absolutely. So methylation in a nutshell, it is the foundation of how our cells, well, let me put it this way. Genetics is the genetic code. That protein you make, that MTHFR protein you make based on the gene, it will always be mutated, always. But how much of it are you making? How much is being expressed? So you methylate the genes to turn them on or off to make more or less of them. So seasonal depression, for example, less sunlight, you make less of the genes that make serotonin and dopamine. That's one of the main drivers of seasonal depression. So the vitamin D regulates that. That's why you take vitamin D. It can help with seasonal depression. So methylation, one of the main purposes is to turn the genes on and off, make more or less of these proteins, the workhorses of your cells. Another main function is to make neurotransmitters. So it's also used to make glutathione. So one thing that happens is that when you have inflammation in the body or oxidative stress in the body, your body will make more homocysteine, which is used to make glutathione to fight these things off. But then you may not have as much methylation ingredients to make your neurotransmitters. That's why sometimes you're inflamed, you get brain fog, you can't make as much neurotransmitters. You can't heal yourself and turn the right genes on and off because your cells are dedicating everything, all the methylation, towards making that glutathione. And what happens with people is homocysteine goes up. Most people think homocysteine, when it's high, it's, I mean, it's too high or too low is bad, but most of the time it's too high for people. It raises up because your body is trying to make glutathione. You have the homocysteine, which is used to make the glutathione, but maybe you're missing the ingredients. Maybe you're missing the selenium. Maybe you're missing the vitamin C. So your body's pooling the homocysteine there, which can cause a lot of blood vessel issues, heart disease, a lot of these other things. So again, the methylation overall to turn the genes on and off, to make neurotransmitters, to make glutathione. These are the main functions of the methylation cycle. And it's a cycle after all. So which step isn't working as well? There's probably around a dozen genes or so mainly involved in the methylation cycle that can be mutated in many different areas. So this is why people come to me. Yeah, I got MTHFR checked. I'm like, okay, cool. That's telling us basically nothing. Yeah, people build full protocols just around one gene, which to me doesn't make any sense. Histamine is a neurotransmitter that our body makes. It wakes us up. It makes us alert. It's also involved in dilating blood vessels. So people think of histamine as just being involved with allergies. Well, high histamine can be linked to brain fog, anxiety, depression, psoriasis, eczema. During inflammation, your cells release histamine as well. So your brain's making its own histamine just for you to function, affect your mood. During inflammation, you also release histamine. So this is why too high of histamine from a food, it can feel kind of like you're infected with something. There's other bad stuff released during actual infections aside from just histamine, but you can feel that kind of, I call it the blah, blah feeling overall. Wired but tired, headaches, brain fog. A lot of the time it has to do with histamine. Histamine is a vasodilator. It dilates blood vessels. What is POTS? POTS is when you stand up and there's vasodilation. So there's a, so when you tie that back to POTS, POTS has been linked to different types of infections. Well, guess what? When you have an infection, your body releases histamine. mm-hmm. along with other things to clear the infection. So it's also histamine intolerance has been linked to POTS. It dilates the blood vessels. Exercise releases histamine to dilate blood vessels. Mm-hmm. So I worked with people that have bad histamine intolerance, which is when your body has a hard time breaking down histamine. So very high histamine a lot of the time. These people will like pass out when they're working out. They'll black out because their blood pressure drops. Yeah. So you see, my mind looks at the patterns. It seems like a distant cousin, a kissing cousin of POTS, right? They have it when they're working out, but you see on the pathway side, histamine could be a factor of all of this. Mm-hmm. I believe we were talking about before the call, pine bark extract, pycnogenol was something that helped you out a lot with your health journey mm-hmm. based on the genes that we saw for you. And what do you know? That's been shown to help with athletic performance mm-hmm. because it could help with blood vessel support. It could also help with histamine as well. So histamine is a very, very common thing I see with people. And I'm not saying histamine is the cause of everything. I think in terms of what is a contributor and how many contributors can we stack up and support naturally with the lowest number of supplements? That's mm-hmm. how my brain approaches things. And again, I'll never claim I cure everyone of everything. Any doctor that says that, that's kind of a red flag. But whether you're 90% better in a week, I've had that. Whether you're 20% better in 2 months, I've had that as well. Getting crystal clear on what you need can help a lot. I believe you had, and I have this as well, I think it's BCL6 and STAT6. These are two gene mutations linked to increased allergic signaling. So our cells are hardwired to be more sensitive, more production of histamine. Hmm. What do you know? It's linked to allergies. It's linked to asthma. It's linked to different immune disorders. Pycnogenol specifically blocks those two genes. Mm. Now, I'm not saying, let me put it this way. Is there a study that shows if you have these genes, you respond better to pycnogenol than people without it? No. But this is where my brain goes and what my practice is focusing on. And my readout is I'm helping people. You know, I'm improving their lives. So again, who's going to fund that study? What's the real financial incentive to run that study? I hope to run these types of studies eventually, but that's how I'm approaching these things. So again, it doesn't mean that pycnogenol won't help you mm-hmm. if you don't have those genes, but if you have histamine issues, it definitely can help you. It's also been shown to help with PMS and menopause, which are also symptoms due to high histamine. So again, the patterns, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that's linked to higher histamine, I think pycnogenol could help. And a lot of studies, like I mentioned, the allergies, the asthma, sleep, headaches, ADHD, there's data on this supplement helping with all of those.
It's interesting because, when I took pycnogenol, I remember the next day I had like a heavy Metcon day prescribed by my coach. And it was weird because I hadn't felt this way in such a long time where I wasn't as fatigued. It like felt like my blood was actually making the movement that it needed to make. Like my heart was functioning mm-hmm. like a pump as it mm-hmm. should. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had a third lung. You know how Matt Fraser, I don't know if you know who that is, but he always talks about how beta alanine made him feel like a third lung. And I'm like, I don't think beta alanine works that way, but pycnogenol actually made me feel that way. I didn't have to take as much rest. And then the thing that I did notice, the vasodilation, right, was going from laying down to standing or sitting down to standing, I wasn't having these weird like seeing stars or blacking out. And that's something that I do deal with quite a bit. I try not to talk much about like my symptoms and things of that nature on, mm-hmm. especially on this channel that we're talking about specifically, just because I don't want people to like, people with chronic illness tend to like latch on to other people's symptoms and stuff.
Yeah. You gotta be very careful.
Absolutely. Yeah, you do for sure. But I don't mind you bringing up the things that we saw in my report at all. Actually, I've been looking for it. So one thing that you did mention though too was histamine and methylation and it's a cycle. And trying to figure out which part of the cycle is being blocked or which one's not working, rather. So what are some of the things that you look for to figure out what portion or what part of the cycle is blocked? Does that question make sense? Is that a problem?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cool. So I'm the genetic guy, right? So I look at the genetic mutations. Mm-hmm. So for example, MTHFR or any of these genes can mutate it in multiple different areas. So it's not so much, do you have an MTHFR mutation or not? 95% of my clients have a mutation, but how many do you have? Mm-hmm. And if there's another gene that can kind of, I'm trying to word this, kind of antagonize MTHFR. So when your MTHFR doesn't work, usually can lead to higher homocysteine. I mentioned the CVS and AHCY genes. Those mutations make the gene work faster. MTHFR makes it work slower. Some gene mutations in a given gene make it work faster. Some make it work slower. Mm. So how do you know where the net effect lies? This is why you need to go deeper and look at 3, 4, 5 individual mutations within any given gene. I see a lot of panels, they check one mutation, say, here you go, but it may not be the full picture there. Mm. So looking at the mutations, how many mutations are there on there? A lot of these mutations are additive. MTHFR, you can have one mutation, it works 80% as well. You can have it work, and this is based on studies, roughly 80% as well. You can have mutation combinations that make it work roughly 20% as well. Mm. So that's a fourfold difference in the activity on how well you're making that methylfolate. So we need to adjust the methylfolate dosage, not just based on how many MTHFR mutations you have, but based on your diet, based on how sensitive you are to adrenaline, based on a lot of other factors as well. So I'm trying not to go too deep with this stuff. But yeah, I'm looking at the genes. And again, I am not saying the genetics are the only thing that matters. I'm merely saying if you have a pie chart, that's all aspects for total health. Stress management, exercise, sunlight, you know, daily movement. Of course, these things are massively important. But the piece of the pie chart that is genetics, I'm just shining the light on it and saying, hey, I really don't think anyone close to anyone is looking at this properly, giving the proper time to each individual and to educate them properly. And that's why I'm on my mission to do what I do. It's another modality. And I really love genetics because imagine if I could get you, you know, 20% improvement within a week or two, like kind of lock that in because the genes are predetermined, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe other stuff to work on, but if I can lock you in the 20-30% improvement, you know what you need, what you don't need. Then you go to the next practitioner, you have your blueprint. Oh, they want to give you a supplement that's high in sulfur. You can now be educated on your own body and be your own health advocate and tell them, hey, I may not feel very good with that. Or you may say, hey, I'm going to try the supplement, but now when I don't feel good, I know why that is. Mm. So I could either try something like we mentioned that molybdenum to see if that helps or try another supplement entirely. These supplements are like Swiss Army knives. People only look at one or two pieces of it. Mm. My job is to look at all the things they do and make sure not only are some of those tools on the Swiss Army knife serving you, but make sure none of them are clashing with you.
Mm. Makes sense. Okay, cool. I want to ask this question real quick and then we'll take a pause for a second just so I can fix something here on the screen. When it comes to histamine for athletes specifically, let's talk CrossFit specifically because training volume is so high, intensity is so high pretty often, right? There's not like an off season there like there is with powerlifting or bodybuilding. There is, but most people are still doing two-a-days, things of that nature. How important do you think paying attention to histamine and methylation is in that population of people? Because what I see often is, you know, CrossFitters are due to, you know, the high volumes of training and the intensity and things of that nature, the nature of the sport's really difficult. There's a lot of injury in that population, but how important do you think that the methylation cycle is in that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to say if I think it's particularly more important for athletics versus for at least the methylation aspect, because that is the foundation.
Or histamine, rather.
Histamine. And it is those higher intensity exercises that release more of that histamine. Mm-hmm. So some of you guys listening, maybe you get itchy, maybe you get hives, maybe you get some wheezing when you exercise, because the histamine, think of it like the bucket, right? The histamine bucket may be a little more filled than it should. You do high intensity exercise, you hit that breaking point there. Mm. So you see what I'm saying? Like the pycnogenol can lower the bucket to begin with, so you have more wiggle room, because our buckets are always going to be more or less filled. That's just part of life. Yep. There's a reason why our bodies release histamine during exercise. Like that's never going to change. That's just how we're wired. And like a lot of people can feel very, very wiped after exercise. You know, mm-hmm. could be lactic acid, but it could also be the histamine aspect there as well. High histamine can also be linked to joint issues as well. So, I think it is important for athletes to to monitor that. And I'm trying to think, is it that much? Well, yeah, because your readout is like a heart, like a time or a weight or something like that, right? So yeah. This can really make all the big difference there. But we don't want to completely block histamine. They've done studies that giving people antihistamines before exercise, it prevents around 40%. I forgot how many thousands of genes get activated after exercise. It's a lot. But around 40% of those do not get activated if you take an antihistamine before exercise.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of like how they say, you know, you don't want to take a bunch of ibuprofen after a surgery.
Yep.
Because it's blocking the good inflammation. Mm-hmm. Histamine is responsible for some forms of good inflammation in the body, sure, such as healing after the muscles. So, you know, conventional medicine uses antihistamines. You have the receptor here. It blocks the receptor, so your cells don't sense histamine. Mm-hmm. But it does nothing to lower the overall histamine in your body, right? Then over time, your cells make more of the receptors to compensate. This is why some people, they try to come off, they take Claritin or Zyrtec every day. They come off of it, they have head to toe rashes or hives. They feel horrible because the body's rebounding. It's just like taking a bunch of Adderall for years and stopping. You're going to be exhausted. You're going to be tired. You're not going to be able to focus for shit, right? Mm-hmm. So you come off the antihistamine you've been on forever, more skin issues, maybe more wheezing issues, more headaches, migraines. So again, rather than just blocking your body from feeling the histamine, let's just get your body to have an appropriate amount of histamine in the body. Now, of course, a lot of different routes to do that. Easier said than done, right?
Yep.
But overall, relying on just the antihistamines here, it feels better. It's a Band-Aid fix. I think it's going to catch up to you eventually.
Okay, got it. Tyler, let me fix one thing on the screen real quick. I'll be right back. All right, we're back. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Okay, so yeah, so for one thing that I have noticed for, you know, specifically with like CrossFitters is that there is a brain fog effect that happens after these high intensity intervals or, you know, because a lot of what we do is broad time domains or like short interval type stuff, really high intensity. And so my thought has been that it could be a histamine issue because if you exercise too much, right, that brings up histamine pretty high. Am I right on that?
Correct. And then another thing I'd like to mention too is there's a lot of crosstalk between adrenaline and histamine.
Okay.
So when you're training hard, you know, you're taking things that like caffeine, different stimulants to raise up adrenaline because it's been shown to help, right? It's like fight or flight. It makes you train harder. So this is why some people may get hives when they're very stressed. So again, you see the patterns here, right? Yeah. So when you are doing high intensity exercise, your body itself is releasing histamine, your body itself is releasing adrenaline, and those are both also releasing more of each other. Got histamine it. Can stimulate adrenaline release, adrenaline can stimulate histamine release. So you see that, you know, that yo-yo going back and forth.
Okay, cool. So Tyler, I want to thank you for your time. It's been awesome so far. I'm going to ask you a few questions from like my POTS forum, specifically for those people, for that population. But I really appreciate all the information thus far. And maybe we can get on a podcast and actually talk about sports performance, athletic performance.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be super interesting. Yeah, because I do have a lot of like higher level like CrossFitters that listen to that podcast too. So I think it'd be good for them. I think that this genetics conversation is something that when the science kind of catches up is going to change everything, like
absolutely,
steroids and vitamins, minerals, all that stuff. So I have one question that says, considering genetic testing is generally something done voluntarily, if you could only do what 2 to 3 tests, what tests would you deem the most important or shows the most amount of data?
You're talking about which type of genetic test?
Yeah, I guess. Types? That's what, yeah, that's how this was written out. So I would say, let's talk about, Yeah, what are the three tests that you would get in general? So I guess a genetic report would probably be one of them, right?
Yeah.
And then what else would you do, like a viral test and a homocysteine test, or?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I'm a big fan of blood work as well, but also certain mutations.
Like a CBC?
Yeah, I mean, I like CBC. I like getting homocysteine checked. I like inactive and active vitamin D. That can give you insights if there is any sort of infections going on. I'm a big fan of iron as well. Iron, ferritin, TIBC, these types of things. To check for anemia, iron overload, that could also indicate some sort of infection. Now, I haven't dove deep into this myself. I'm familiar with it, but I want to educate my more on organic acid testing. Oat testing. So that's basically testing for many different types of detailed metabolites in your cells, because I'm heavily on the genetics, but I'm not, I'll never say genetics are the only thing you need. So you can cross-reference your genetics with specific metabolites of, let's say, the methylation cycle and confirm, okay, that gene that says doesn't work well genetically, the thing it makes, you're actually low in that thing. So it can really prove to us with the snapshot, kind of what we were mentioning about Ben Lynch, just because you have that gene mutation doesn't guarantee that that's a major issue for you.
Sure.
So that organic acids test can help supplement that as well. I have worked with people for hormone issues with Dutch test, more so I can read certain parts of it. I'll never claim I'm a Dutch expert. I usually collaborate with people on that. But hormones are very, very important for health optimization as well.
Yep.
But again, you know, why is your testosterone low? Can this, do you really not make testosterone as well genetically, that exact step? That's possible. Maybe you can't make DHEA as well. So a DHEA supplement is what you need. Mm. I see a lot of people, they hop on the TRT just because, and like, maybe you don't need the TRT. Maybe you need the ingredient to make testosterone.
Mm.
But yeah, overall, I think the genetics, I think comprehensive blood work, organic acids test, Dutch if you're concerned with hormones, but those are main ones I think are really, really critical.
Cool. Got it. And then let's see. I'm going to look for the good ones. So actually, I'm going to ask you this one real quick, because we touched on this a little bit earlier. You talked about supplements and getting from, like, I don't know, a functional medicine doctor or something like that, but they don't know the genetics to it. They're just going based off of your symptom. So a question that I wanted to ask you on that before we hop into the other ones, considering working with other practitioners, how would you factor in like the genetics with tests and supplements for, let's say, like chelators, binders, things of that nature? Like, so if somebody's trying to get rid of heavy metals or there's a viral infection, how would you make recommendations or for adding in supplements or taking them away if they're trying to like hit a specific target?
Yeah. So I've worked with a lot of people that have mold or parasites or these types of things. And let me put it this way. There's a lot of people out there that they do 2 or 3 mold or parasite cleanses per year. Why do you need to keep doing it?
Right.
Clearly, these detoxes, they may get rid of that pathogen for the time being, but why are your cells so susceptible to these things? What is the real root cause here? Why do, when I work with a family of four, do 2 family members get super sick from mold in the same house? The other 2 have minor to no issues. So you see, it's not just solely the presence of these toxins or pathogens. We're all going to inhale mold. You know, we're all going to consume parasites. But why do some people get so messed up? This is where I believe addressing the genetic root drivers. Certain mutations in liver health, I've seen have a massive correlation with people. People that have more of these mutations, they come to me, you know, I check up to 14 mutations in this one PEMT gene. That's very critical for making phosphatidylcholine, which is critical for liver, kidney, gallbladder health. People can have none. People could have 14. When I see people with like 10 plus, they're the ones with all these co-infections, with all these different issues. They're doing these liver cleanses with all these herbs and stuff, which could also have side effects, could chelate iron and copper, this or that. And I'm not saying they don't help liver health. They do have data for that. But rather than using a random herbal blend, we have data. Your cells have been starving for this specific thing throughout your entire life. That's linked to kidney issues. You've had kidney issues. That's linked to liver issues. Like, bro, sometimes I spook some of my clients because I'll ask them, do you have any pain in your upper right abdomen? And they're like, oh my God, yeah. How did you know that? Well, you have 12 mutations in this gene.
Yeah.
That's linked to fatty liver disease.
Hmm.
And are you, they have fatigue, pain in the upper right abdomen. And what do you know? They have early fatty liver disease. Wow. So you see, and I'm not saying that's, you know, every time 100, but very, very often I could see that because they have all those mutations there. So again, you know, before people should be going on all these antimicrobials, in my opinion, let's make sure the liver's working properly and use the genes to figure out what specific nutrients that you need. I've helped people with mold and parasites without having a mold and parasite protocol.
Yep.
I'm fixing what's broken with them.
Yeah. So that's kind of like what I'm more so asking is so when they go to the practitioner and I don't know how to, like, maybe they're prescribed activated charcoal is like what the person wants them to take or whatever. And you're like, hey, you have these gene mutations that aren't going to, you know, agree with activated charcoal. So let's not do that. Let's do something else. Is that kind of something that you tend to do?
Yeah. I mean, not so much with specifically activated charcoal, but I can educate how to use them. Like, some people won't be instructed. You don't want to take activated charcoal around supplements because you'll pull out the supplements as well. I've worked with people that aren't, they're not educated on that by their practitioner. Mm. So they're taking them at the wrong times. But yes, that overall process there, yes, you're, you know, this antimicrobial raises adrenaline in the body.
Got it.
So it may make you more anxious. But here's the thing. Sometimes that makes the most sense for you.
Mm.
But I will tell you, here are some other supplements to help you break down adrenaline. So you want the antimicrobial effects of that supplement. You just want to counteract the other mechanism, if that makes sense. So you want the scissors on the Swiss Army knife. You don't want the screwdriver. So we're going to give you a supplement that basically like masks the screwdriver so you could still have that type of blade. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the next question that I have for you would be, how can supplements help POTS, MSAS, MALS, brain fog, memory, fatigue, stuff like that? Let's touch specifically on MSAS because I think it's kind of one of those things that has become almost trendy and super popular and probably, in my opinion, isn't really as much of an issue as a lot of people would tend to believe it is. But maybe you can speak to it more.
Yeah, so the lines are very blurred between histamine intolerance, which is very, very common.
Yep.
I have that. I'm very sensitive to histamine.
Mm-hmm.
MCAS, mast cell activation syndrome. The main difference in that is your mast cells, the cells that release histamine, they release things other than just histamine. Histamine intolerance, there's a lot of histamine being dumped, not a lot being broken down. Okay, that can have its own host of issues. MCAS is when the mast cells also release other inflammatory molecules like TNF-alpha, like interleukin-6, like interleukin-1-beta. These are other pro-inflammatory molecules that can feel a lot worse than just histamine intolerance. But where's the dotted line there, right? You need very advanced testing, and it's not super, super accurate to determine whether or not you do have MCAS. Mm. But again, whether it's histamine intolerance, MCAS, POTS, we know histamine intolerance is linked to POTS. We know MCAS is linked to POTS. So again, I keep coming back to, again, the way my brain looks at these things. Let's just work on finding out which gene maybe can't break down histamine as well. Maybe you can't make a certain nutrient that fuels the gene to break down histamine as well. So my goal is to help you educate. Also, let's limit what foods are going to raise histamine in your body. Mm-hmm. Let's get a food allergy test. I ate peas and almonds every day throughout my PhD. I was quite allergic, but all I got was more brain fog and anxiety. I thought I was getting poisoned at my lab because I had brain fog every day. But guess what? I would go and tend to my mice, the mouse colony for my experiments. I'm allergic to mice. I inhale it, dump histamine. I go and eat lunch, peas and almonds. I dump histamine. I felt like garbage.
Yeah.
But you see how, like, educating people about those factors, I'm not saying that will cure your POTS or your MCAS. But if we can lower your histamine load by 10, 20%, you will feel better. But is there maybe a mold or a parasite in the body making you dump more histamine? Yes, we can work on that long term. But I also want to help educate you. you know, the high sulfur foods might be raising more of your bucket. Again, not that it's the cause, yeah, but I want to help you feel better in the moment.
Got it. Yeah. So I think that one thing that I oftentimes do with people is I tell them, when they become a client of mine, I'm like, track every single thing that you eat for 7 days and then track your symptoms between a window of like 30 minutes to 2 hours, because whether you eat the same foods or not, we can kind of draw lines and draw, like, you know, so like, let's say that you have a piece of cake and then a cookie on Thursday or something, like a piece of cake on Monday, a cookie Thursday, we can draw the line and be like, okay, maybe it's the sugar in those things, you know what I mean? Certain ingredients or whatever. So let's just cut out refined sugar for a week and see how you feel. Those types of things. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I think 90% of health is pattern recognition.
Yeah.
You know, what I really do for people is that I pick up on dots that other people miss. Mm-hmm. I help you connect the dots, and I want you to continue to connect the dots for yourself. Like a lot of my clients, they feel better. I got an email 2 months later. They're like, I've been feeling so much better. Thank you. You know, I went out to eat with friends. I felt horrible. I Googled the food. Mm. What do you, like you told me, it's high in X thing that I'm sensitive to.
Yep.
So they connected the dot for themselves. They're not just saying, oh, I'm inflamed, let me take an ibuprofen to mask it. Now they know why the food did that. There's always a cause and an effect. I don't believe in waking up on the wrong side of the bed. There's always a cellular reason for every time you feel good, you feel bad, you feel normal, and everything in between.
Awesome. So how would you suggest treating histamine intolerance, and how would we know if someone, if we are having some histamine intolerance and what to do for it? And then I'll end it too with, are there any supplement recommendations in general that you would tell people, like, you can take this, you have POTS or the umbrella thing, right? That you would be like, hey, this would probably be fine for you. Go ahead and try it.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of those, I think the pycnogenol we mentioned can be a pretty good one. Of course, guys, there's always a small percentage of people that don't feel good on any given supplement. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of specific genes that make you not respond well to that, but overall, that's a pretty safe one that I've seen. And what to tell people too is you can intentionally have foods that are higher in histamine to see how you feel, mm-hmm, and compare to that feeling. Meaning, I used to have apple cider vinegar every morning. Good for blood sugar, good for gut health, good for digestion. I would have it with I'm a big guy. I have a big smoothie in the morning before I train.
You do smoothies and before you train?
Yeah, first thing in the morning.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, throw some oats, a little bit of avocado, but some fruit, whey protein, in and out pretty quick. But I would feel brain fog at the gym for the first few hours of the day. And I thought, oh, it's the apple cider vinegar tanking my blood sugar. Mm. I would have a tiny bit of apple cider vinegar. There's probably like 80, 100 grams of carbs in that smoothie. So eventually I'm like, there's no way the little drops I'm having of that are tanking my blood sugar. I looked up vinegars, all vinegars are high in histamine.
Hmm.
So one way you could try would be have some apple cider vinegar and pay attention to how you feel. Mm-hmm. I know right away, oh, my brain fog's coming back. I feel that right away. If I have pasta salad with vinegar, I could feel that. Pickles are rich in vinegar. So I kind of tell people, you know, you can intentionally mess yourself up to get used to what that feeling feels like. And then in the future, oh, I feel a little bit like that again, reverse engineer what you actually put into your body. Mm. Another supplement that can help a lot for people is called DAO enzymes. So DAO, it's a gene that makes a protein in your gut. This is what gets released in your gut and breaks down histamine in your gut. You can have mutations there. I check up to 10 different mutations there. So if someone has one or two, I'll mention it. If someone has like 5, 6, the record I've seen is 9. No. I've seen 10. That person had all the symptoms of high histamine. That mutation is linked to headaches. They had chronic headaches. They had chronic brain fog. So if you can't break down the histamine in your gut, you can absorb that into your bloodstream and add to your histamine load. DAO enzymes, I do like the ones from Seeking Out. I think it's called histamine block or histamine digest.
Yeah, I got some of that here.
I'll tell my clients, take one of those pills with each meal for 2 or 3 days. See how much better you feel. The people with more mutations usually are like, oh my God, I feel so much better. The number one defense against gut histamine is that protein. If they're hardwired for theirs not to work as well, no wonder why they feel better adding that in. So if you feel better taking a DAO enzyme, that means your gut histamine is an issue. Now, regarding histamine that's in the actual body itself, the pycnogenol can help. SAMe is also a good nutrient that can help the gene that breaks down histamine. But that one, you know, you want to start low dosing with that. Some people don't respond great to that. Depends on the person, how they methylate.
Mess me up.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, some people, and again, sometimes the genes can point towards something. I recommend it. I always go by how the client feels, right? Mm-hmm. Because genetics are so complex. So they guide us in the right direction. It's right the majority of the time. In case it isn't, that's why you have me on call for email. You know, that's why we have all these other options to add down the road.
Sure. Cool. Well, with that, I'll say that if you are looking to kind of fix your histamine intolerance, if you're looking to fix any of your health problems, go ahead and hit up Dr. Tyler Panzner right here. He's the man. So one last question, very last one, gut health. I feel like this has been talked about so much throughout the years. It became super popular with like the Gut and Psychology Syndrome book. I forget who wrote that. How important is the link between the gut and actual holistic wellness or wellness?
Oh, incredibly, incredibly important. You know, inflammation gets into the body somehow. How is it getting in the body? It's getting in the body. You're inhaling it on the skin. I think the gut is the major entry point for a lot of this. The processed foods, the microplastics, the stress, you know, these can cause that leaky gut. High histamine in the gut also causes leaky gut.
Is leaky gut actually like recognized now as a real legitimate term?
I don't really follow what conventional medicine deems legit or not, right? So I really wouldn't know, but sure. I do know there is testing for things like zonulin, which can tell you if you have leaky gut. But here's another thing people aren't aware of is leaky gut is when the linkages between your gut cells break. But you could also have what's, I believe that's transcellular leaky gut, but you can have, intracellular, but basically rather than stuff going between the gaps between each cell, you can also have viruses and histamine be absorbed through a healthy gut cell and absorbed into the body. So as I mentioned that high histamine in the gut, it can cause leaky gut, but I've had people that say, here's a gut test. I don't have leaky gut, but we fix the gut histamine. They feel a lot better because even though it wasn't breaking open the gut cells and letting bacteria and stuff in, your gut cells can still absorb the histamine while the gut lining remains intact. So leaky gut, yes, me, absolutely a real thing. You could absolutely test for it, but it's more than just that. Just because you don't have that opening of that leaky gut doesn't mean that gut issues aren't contributing to your overall chronic health issues.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. There's so much there, but maybe for another time for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the takeaways real quick. If you're a person that does everything the right way, eating healthy, getting sunlight, doing all the recovery stuff, meditating, whatever, and you're still feeling like crap, get your genetics tested.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm clearly biased here, but you know, the way I look at it too is rather than, I like genetics, that they're guaranteed to give you results. Everyone listening has millions of mutations. Everyone listening, I have to really be careful which genes I pick so we could fit it all in an hour, right? So it's not if you're going to get insights. It's how much are those insights going to change your life, how quickly. Sure. A lot of people spend tens of thousands of all these functional labs and stuff when we could look at the genetics and get a lot of the issues resolved just through that, right? So obviously biased here, but I really do think the genetics can give you a clear blueprint. And I believe lock you in some percentage of improvement, and then you have a blueprint to go for future different types of practitioners.
Awesome. And then if you're chronically ill, get your genetics tested. It's gonna help you out too. So dude, I really want to thank you for your time. I know that the community is really going to love this, and probably the podcast channel will love this too. And I'd love to have you back on so we can talk more about entrepreneurship and the things that kind of, you know, you see for your future or whatever, and maybe hook you up with some elite level CrossFitters. Cause I think that if we could see some major improvements in some of those guys, it'd really make people kind of like their jaws drop, you know? So
yeah, you know absolutely. With, yeah. No, I mean, I've worked a couple NFL athletes, some NHL athletes, NCAA athletes. So I've worked with athletes as well doing that.
Sweet.
And again, it's just optimizing the cellular health, right? Obviously, we tweak it more towards that physical performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we close, I know we mentioned about, I'd love to give a discount code to all of your listeners. I think we said, what was it? Cool. It was Potsy, you said?
Yeah. Can we actually, can we change it?
Sure.
Are you okay with that? Yeah. Let's do CXC.
Okay.
That's
okay.
it.
Okay. So yeah, so you got the code CXC. That'll give you $150 off. That covers your DNA kit, for a one-on-one deep dive with me. And, you know, being totally honest here, you know, fact, well, this is fact. Every human being has genes, right? Mm-hmm. Every gene, every person has mutations, including ones we could support naturally. So I don't just work with people that are very, very sick. I work with high level executives. I work with high level athletes that feel great. They just want to see where the real ceiling is for their health. And people that think they're at a 10 out of 10 every day, the vast majority of the time, I think they're at an 8, 8.5 out of 10. Oh, and again, yeah. Hey, I'm not saying that's a bad spot to be, right? But there are levels to this. And each year I'm like, how much better can I feel, right? I learn more and more about my body, feeling better and better. So yeah, man, really, really appreciate you having me on. Hope you guys listening got some good nuggets out of this. And yeah, looking forward to continue to advance my mission about hyper-personalization, proper supplement education.
Heck yeah, man. I appreciate you so much. Thanks again, Tyler.
Thank you, bud. Take care.
All right. We'll see you later.